In our recent Arab Shabbat Bible studies, we have been taking a detailed look at the book of Ruth and the role that Ruth plays in the broader scheme of the biblical narrative. In this Haftorah, we're introduced to another woman by the name of Rahab, who lived in Jericho at the time when the children of Israel conquered the city in a dramatic event. Go to Joshua 2, verse 1. Now Joshua, the son of Nun, sent out two men from Acacia Grove to spy secretly, saying, "Go, view the land, especially Jericho." So they went and came to the house of a harlot named Rahab and lodged there. Now Rahab is one of the more interesting women mentioned in the Bible. Not only did these spies find lodging at Rahab's home, but she also hid them, protecting them from the king of Jericho. She is about to play an important role in the conquest of the land of Canaan. As the story of Rahab plays out, we will see that she rejects her own heritage, her culture, and religion to be joined with the Israelites and their God. Now, what is her purpose in doing so? What did she hope to gain? As we dig deeper into the story of Rahab, we will see that she plays a vitally important role in not only the conquest of Jericho, but in the salvation of her family and the future salvation of all of Israel. In reading the Torah portion Shelach, Numbers 13:1 through 15:41, we read about the 12 spies sent by Moses into the Promised Land to bring back important information of what they were to expect when they entered this land. Now you know the story. Joshua was one of only two spies who returned with a good report. And as a result of the overall negative report from the spies, the children of Israel were delayed in the wilderness for the next 40 years. When the children of Israel were once again positioned to enter the Promised Land, Joshua seemed to have no issue with the idea and methodology of sending in spies to gain necessary reconnaissance of Jericho. Although the purpose of the spies was similar, the results were vastly different. While the story in the Haftorah is again about sending spies, the main character, however, is Rahab. One of Rahab's main characteristics is that we can gain from this passage is that she was a woman of courage. She hid the Israelite spies from the king's men. Go to Joshua 2, 2 through 5. "And it was told the king of Jericho, saying, 'Behold, men have come here tonight from the children of Israel to search out the country.' So the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, 'Bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out all the country.' Then the woman took the two men and hid them. So she said, 'Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. And it happened as the gate was being shut, when it was dark, that the men went out. And where the men went, I do not know. Pursue them quickly, for you may overtake them.'" Now there is some question among scholars that Rahab may not have actually been a prostitute or harlot. The historian Josephus refers to her as an innkeeper, and the Hebrew word translated as harlot is zana. Number 2181 in the Strong's Concordance, meaning to commit adultery, to commit idolatry or fornication. But there is some question that the word zana may have as its root zan, which refers to food. In support of Josephus's rendering of the word zana as innkeeper, the Targum Jonathan, the Second Temple Era Aramaic paraphrase of the Hebrew Scriptures, also translates the word zana as innkeeper. If Rahab were indeed an innkeeper, it would better fit the context of the biblical narrative. Whichever kind of house it was that Rahab operated, it was a good place for the Israelite spies to lodge and gather information. As we just read in verses 2 through 5, word quickly got to the king that these men were there. There was cause for concern by the king because the reputation of the Israelites as fearsome warriors was widespread. Rahab took great care in hiding these spies from the king and assisting in their escape. Joshua 2, verses 6 through 9. "But she had brought them up to the roof and hid them with the stalks of flax which she had laid out in order for the roof. Then the men pursued them by the road to the Jordan, to the fords. And as soon as those who pursued them had gone out, they shut the gate. Now before they lay down, she came up to them on the roof, and she said to the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land, that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. Helping the two showed a great deal of courage on the part of Rahab. Had she revealed that the spies were indeed in her establishment, they would certainly have been killed by the king and his men. And by hiding them, she put herself in the position of facing a death penalty for her traitorous actions. There's a specific reference to this in the ancient legal code of Hammurabi. Now, if outlaws have congregated in the establishment of a woman wine cellar, and she has not arrested those outlaws and did not take them to the palace, the wine cellar shall be put to death. Rahab made a conscious choice to aid the Israelite spies and put her own life and resources on the line. But why would she do that for these total strangers? By making this choice, she had to lie to the king's men, not once, but three times. First, she lied about knowing the origin of the Israelite spies, as we found in verse 4. And second, she lied about their whereabouts. She had hid them away in verse 5. And third, she lied about her knowledge of the closure of the city gates in verses 5 through 7. Now, is it moral to tell these types of lies to protect another life, putting one's own life at risk? In the Torah, we are told not to bear false witness. But at the same time, we have previously studied about the threshold covenant. And under such a covenant, one is obligated to protect the life of a guest even at the sacrifice of one's own life or the life of other members of the household. Now, we have an example in recent history where people have lied in order to protect innocent lives. In Europe, during World War II, many Gentiles lied to Nazi officials in order to protect the lives of innocent Jews. Now, are these actions, lying to the authorities in this context, the moral and ethical thing to do? Now, many people who hid or protected the Jews during the reign of the Nazi Germany were later honored by the State of Israel and declared righteous Gentiles. The actions of Rahab should be viewed in the same light. Now, what would prompt Rahab to take these actions? The reputation of the Israelites certainly preceded them. Rahab spoke to the Israelite spies about the inhabitants of Jericho and what they knew about them. Joshua 2:10-11. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the waters of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were on the other side of the Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted. Neither did there remain any more courage in anyone because of you. For the Lord your God, He is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. Rahab had demonstrated that she had aligned herself with the Israelites and their God. She had, along with the other residents of Jericho, heard about the Exodus and about the God of Israel. Unlike the gods of the other nations, she knew that the God of Israel cared about and loved the people of Israel. He had performed mighty miracles for them, and now she understood that this God was the only God in heaven and on earth. The Hebrew word used in verse 10, translated as utterly destroyed, is charam, Numbers 27:63, meaning to seclude, to devote to religious use, to consecrate. When the Israelites were victorious in battle, they didn't just plunder a village and kill all the people, desecrating them in the process. Their victories were marked by devoting all the wealth gained to God. This was not normal or a normal way of doing business in the ancient world. In exchange for her loyalty and protection of the spies, Rahab makes the request to, in turn, be protected when the Israelites take down the city of Jericho. Joshua 2:12-14. Now therefore, I beg you, swear to me by the Lord, since I have shown you kindness, that you also will show kindness to my father's house, and give me a true token. and spare my father, my mother, my brothers, my sisters, and all that they have, and deliver our lives from death. So the men answered her, Our lives for yours, if none of you tell this business of ours. And it shall be, when the Lord has given us the land, that we will deal kindly and truly with you. Now this seems to be a fair request. She was risking everything to protect these men. The spies agreed to help Rahab and her extended family. Joshua 2:15-16. Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was on the city wall. She dwelt on the wall. And she said to them, Get to the mountain, lest the pursuers meet you. Hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Afterward, you may go your way. Rahab's request and the promise given to her by the spies is based on mutual kindness. The actual Hebrew word used in verses 12 and 14 about showing kindness is hesed, number 26:17, meaning kindness, mercy, favor, or good deed. It is most often used in context of covenant devotion. Rahab entered into a covenant relationship with the spies and by extension with the God of Israel. She and her entire family were attaching themselves to the Israelite nation. The Israelite spies told Rahab what she must do to be protected during the coming battle. Joshua 2:17-19. So the men said to her, We will be blameless of this oath of yours which you have made us swear, unless when we come into the land, you bind this line of scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down, and unless you bring your father, your mother, your brothers, and all your father's household into your own home. So it shall be that whoever goes outside the doors of your house into the streets, his blood shall be on his own head, and we will be guiltless. And whoever is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head if a hand is laid on him. The spies laid out three conditions that Rahab would have to meet for the covenant to be completed. First, she was to let down a scarlet cord from the very same window where she allowed them to escape the city and avoid capture by the king's men. Now, this scarlet cord is reminiscent of the threshold covenant where blood is placed on the doorpost and lintels of one's home. The returning Israelites would see the scarlet cord hanging from the window and pass by Rahab's home during the siege. Second, Rahab was to bring her entire extended family into her house, and they were to stay put during the battle. Anyone who left would be subject to being killed in the battle. And the last condition placed on Rahab by the spies was that their agreement was to remain secret. Rahab had put up a good story when the king's men came looking for them. Now secrecy was even more important for her safety and that of her family. Rahab had demonstrated a great deal of courage in protecting these men and in the rejection of her allegiance to her community, her government, and her God. She risked being discovered, which would result in her own death and perhaps the death of the rest of her family as well. These things were not easy choices. Could we make that same choice in our lives? The last few verses of chapter 2 put the finishing touches on the covenant that Rahab entered into with the Israelite spies. Joshua 2:20-24. And if you tell this business of ours, then we will be free from your oath which you made us swear. Then she said, According to your words, so be it. And she sent them away, and they departed. And she bound the scarlet cord in the window. They departed and went into the mountains and stayed there 3 days until the pursuers returned. The pursuers sought them all along the way, but did not find them. So the two men returned, descended from the mountains, and crossed over, and they came to Joshua, the son of Nun, and told him all that had befallen them. And they said to Joshua, Truly, the Lord has delivered all the land into our hands, for indeed all the inhabitants of the country are faint-hearted because of us. Now, what is the result of the bravery of Rahab? First, the spies were able to escape with the needed information and report back to Joshua. And second, because Rahab's faithfulness, the lives of her entire family were spared. Third, the entire camp of Israel was greatly encouraged by the good report returned by the spies. And this was far different than the report of the spies sent by Moses into the land some 40 years earlier. Now fourth, Rahab became a living example of faith and is mentioned several times in the New Testament writings. Look at Hebrews 11, verse 31. By faith, the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe, when she had received the spies with peace. Next, Rahab is mentioned in the book of James, James 2, verse 25. Likewise, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way? The Hebrews passage shows Rahab as a person who trusted God. In the James passage, she is known as someone with the right kind of faith, faith in action. Faith is an action word. True faith is manifest in works. The works don't provide the salvation, but works are the result of faith in action. Finally, one of the most interesting and profound implications and result of the faith of Rahab is that she is quite possibly an ancestor of Messiah Yeshua. Take a closer look at the genealogy listed in Matthew's Gospel. Abraham begot Isaac. Isaac begot Jacob, and Jacob begot Judah and his brothers. Judah begot Perez and Zerah by Tamar. Perez begot Hezron, and Hezron begot Ram. Ram begot Amminadab. Amminadab begot Nahshon, and Nahshon begot Salmon. Salmon begot Boaz by Rahab. Boaz begot Obed by Ruth. Obed begot Jesse, and Jesse begot David, the king. Wow! Because of her profound faithfulness, did God grant Rahab a special place in the lineage of Messiah? Now, we don't know for certain that the Rahab listed in Matthew's Gospel genealogy is the same Rahab of Joshua chapter 2. Jewish tradition says that Rahab later married Joshua. However, many evangelical scholars agree that the Rahab of Joshua chapter 2 is, in fact, the same Rahab of Matthew chapter 1 because the time period in the genealogy would be correct. We also see in Matthew's genealogy two women specifically mentioned in back-to-back generations, both Gentiles, both from a cursed people, yet both professing great faith in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Rahab, who was a Canaanite, was among the people whom God ordered to be destroyed. Deuteronomy 20, verse 17. But you shall utterly destroy them, the Hittite, and the Amorite, and the Canaanite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite, just as the Lord your God has commanded you. The second is Ruth, a Moabite. Deuteronomy 23, verse 3. An Ammonite or Moabite shall not enter the assembly of the Lord, even to the tenth generation. None of his descendants shall enter the assembly of the Lord forever. Now it is interesting that because of their faithfulness, these two women are granted special status and are prime examples of how a generational curse can be broken. God spoke to Abraham, telling him that through him all nations would be blessed. Finally, in the story of Rahab, we see no partiality on the part of God. He cares for all the peoples of the earth. God is more than willing to bring salvation to all, male or female, free or slave, Jew or Gentile. And like Rahab, we may someday be called upon to make the hard choice between remaining in our comfortable home, community, and country, or turning our faith into action and standing up for God and His chosen people. Could we make the choice, as many did during the firestorm that was Nazi Germany, and protect the innocent lives at risk of our own? Now, Rahab witnessed the total destruction of the entire world in which she lived, yet she chose to be connected and counted among God's people. Now, I would only hope that I can do the same if the choice were before me. I'm Dan Cathcart from Moed Ministries International. Shalom and be blessed.